All right, so here are some interesting facts about Ed. No, the first one is the best one, I have to say. So Ed Payne, everyone, welcome. So Ed was the test child for the big wheel. Do you guys know what the big wheel is? Anybody ever seen The Shining? Yeah. You know when the kids are riding around? That's a big wheel. Have you guys seen The Shining?
No.
You have to watch The Shining. The big wheel is awesome. Who knows what the big wheel is? Of course. I did too.
I have the scars to prove it.
So you have the scar trip. So yeah. He was the test child for the big wheel because his dad invented it. How cool is that? And his other four siblings were his test crash test cases.
Yes.
I love that, Ed. So Ed also taught a home brewing class in college, complete with tours of budding craft breweries. That's very fun. And he's currently in week 11 of a 3-week DIY, you guys know what that is, right? Do-it-yourself project at his house in Hamilton. What is it? What are you doing at your house?
I built a mudroom.
A mudroom. Awesome. How long has it been taking you? 3 weeks?
My wife said you can get this done in 3 weeks, and it's taken 11.
It's taken 11, of course. So anyway, welcome Ed Payne, everyone.
Thank you.
Take it away, Ed.
Thank you. So thanks for coming. How many people heard a political ad today, this morning, yesterday?
Me.
Okay, you all heard them? So my background, I started in politics, digging up dirt on politicians. So all the background of those reports, or ads, some guy was out there collecting information, putting it together. So I'm using that as a pretext to talk about competitive intelligence and opposition research. So I'm going to show similarities. I'm also going to put some media on here, and it's going to be fun, be lively, hopefully we'll laugh, we'll learn something. We'll talk about the process of how a political ad is put together and show the similarities of what you might do in your business, whether you're starting a business, have a new business, have a business idea. So it'll be interesting. So like I said, my background, I worked in national politics. I was worked for the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Anybody who ran for the Senate, some guy like me showed up, went over your whole life, whether it was high school, college, business, activity, whatever. So if you're thinking of running for office, be prepared. So from there, I was a private investigator. I did about 6 years as a PI, doing corporate stuff as well as political stuff. And then I got tired of having to feel like I needed a shower after every day of work, so then I became a competitive intelligence analyst with several different firms. So here's our introduction. I'm going to start off with a couple ads just to show you what's going on, put this all in perspective. I'll give you a definition of opposition research, whether it's, this is the definition of political ads. I'm going to show you a couple cycles, then we're going to have a quick quiz. It's going to be interesting, fun. I'll talk about a little bit the process, some examples, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of how step-by-step process of what somebody like me would do for doing competitive intelligence or doing opposition research. So, first ad.
It certainly is a big bun.
It's a very big bun.
Big fluffy bun.
It's a very big fluffy bun.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger places give you a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Where's the beef?
At Wendy's, we serve a hamburger we modestly call a single. And Wendy's single has more beef than the Whopper or Big Mac. At Wendy's, you get more beef and less bun.
Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better. You're Wendy's kind of people.
Okay. 1983, 84. Became a huge hit, right? They're pushing, they're saying, listen, look at us. Look at our competitors, we're better, right? Very subtle, right? So here's an ad that's not so subtle.
Trust and faith. As a doctor, Scott Desjarlais earned his patient's trust.
The pro-life supporter had an affair with a patient a decade ago, and after learning she was pregnant, urged her to have an abortion.
Desjarlais' office did not fight any accusations in the new article. Some constituents say if the story is true, it would make their congressman a total hypocrite.
House Majority PAC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
a little more in your face, right? But kind of the same thing, right? They went through, they took some kind of hook, they went after it, they found the weakness, and they're starting to exploit it. So that's the theme of this project, right? Of this presentation. So this is a good report that talks about the whole process.
The only thing he's pointed to that he's going to get rid of is Big Bird.
Big Bird.
Big Bird.
In times like this, what is he talking about? Saving Big Bird.
Tell us kind of what's going on here.
I'm not sure anyone knows what's going on here right now. Campaigns aren't won or lost all the time with a macaca moment.
There's no hero over here with the yellow shirt, macaca, or whatever his name is.
Or a Todd Akin moment.
If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down.
What we're focused on is just connecting the dots in order to tell a story about each of these folks. We've got stuff cataloged going back to the early and mid-90s. This is stuff no one else has. You can tell it's not always even digitized yet.
This looks very neat and cataloged, by the way.
A year ago, we had a team down in Tallahassee talking to folks at the state party about Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. We came home with these boxes that have been sitting in a back room of the Florida Democratic Party's offices that's just old Jeb Bush material. No one else has this material.
What we do is not glamorous, but it's very exciting. The things that we're producing here, we will see on Saturday Night Live because we broke something interesting and it's making its way through.
Let me ask you a question, Pierce. How long's your drive to work?
I don't know, maybe 15 minutes?
Oh, well, that's a nice commute. It would be a real shame if something were to happen to it.
We don't actually dive into dumpsters. We don't go through people's trash, but we dig up everything that we can find and put it all in one place, package it, make it look good, put in a narrative so that we can send that off and give it to the campaigns.
This is one of the file cabinets that was in the old Watergate office. We're breaking it.
Let's make history.
This is our best plumber's impersonation.
Look at that. It's like a candy wrapper.
Do you think
there.
That's one of the burgers I thought?
Okay. So Corey, you're a professional here. CI. What sounded familiar in that? When people say I do competitive intelligence.
Right.
What's the perception?
That you're spying.
Dumpster diving. I was a private investigator.
Yeah.
I had trash delivered to me at some time, but that's not what competitive intelligence is. It's methodical, going over everything that you can find, putting it into some kind of package, putting some shape to it, and coming up with a narrative of it, right? So it's not just getting all the dirt that you can find or getting all the information, it's putting something around it, putting some shape to it. So, what is opposition research? Legally investigate biographical, legal, criminal, medical, educational, financial, public records. Voting records of the opposing candidate. Now switch that with opposing company or opposing corporation, right? It's just going over all the records you can find and putting it into some shape. It's not just a Republican or Democratic thing. I used to know my counterpart on the Democratic side. We would actually look for each other's signature when we were signing in for public records offices, and then we'd be like, oh, he was in Nebraska, he was in Kansas. This is a great quote here. Offices and research, if it's true, is probably 5 times more effective than paid media. Paid media is like buying ads, right? So if you're looking at the news, what are people talking about now? They're talking about dirty tricks. They're talking about whether or not Ben Carson is going to drop out of the Republican primary. All that stuff is sort of free, right? It's free media attention. So it's worth a lot of money. Next. So what's the connection between competitive intelligence and opposition research? So we have, these are some tools here, SWOT, which is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, right? Pretty basic stuff. Scenario planning, looking out 3 or 4 years, 5 years, what are the potential scenarios that might affect your business? Four corners, that talks about capabilities, drivers, assumptions, what's their current strategy? All that bubbles up into future strategy. So again, it's capabilities, drivers, what's a driver? What's motivating somebody to run a business? What's, you know, is it a family business? What's the saying about a family business? The first generation builds, second generation maintains, third generation sells. Okay, this is, I remember looking at a company that was in their second generation, third generation, wanted to sell. The big hullabaloo going on at the company. They actually expelled the third generation because it was getting too crazy. Pest is political, environmental, societal, and technological. Right? Political. Not just politics, elections. How are things run within the company? Is it a healthy environment? Is it a combative environment? Environment might be the market. It might be selling property in 2008, right? Everything was going to hell in a handbasket. How hard was that? It's probably pretty difficult. Societal, how are things changing within society? Are things, you know, are you going to come out with an asbestos product now? No, because society is totally more environmentally conscious. Technological, what technological advances in your industry are affecting your market? So, that's what we are. And opposition research is really like a small little segment within that, these four, because we do strength and weaknesses analysis. We do scenario planning, which we'll get into. We'll do four corners analysis. You know, what are the, for example, when after the Iowa caucus, the big talk of John Kasich, Governor Kasich from Ohio, was he doesn't have a ground game. He doesn't have a ground game anywhere else other than New Hampshire. So when he's running for South Carolina or maybe in Nevada, he's toast because he doesn't have the capability to run a campaign in those states. Any questions on these? No. So what we do in competitive intelligence, it's called a cycle, right? We'll start with a plan and say what's happening in our industry, what do we want to find out? We'll design a project. We'll do some secondary collection, which secondary means published material. We'll go out and we'll scan any news article. We'll go to any database. We'll pull resumes. Go to LinkedIn. Like Abby said, LinkedIn is a great resource because salespeople will put how much revenue they have to sell, right, on a LinkedIn profile. I'm so great. I'm a salesperson. My quota is 20 million. I blew that out of the water. Okay, how many salespeople are there? 4 or 5. Quota are the same. You can come up to some revenue there on a private company. Or you can find out how many salespeople there are at a company, right? Lots of people want to know, like in pharmaceuticals, how many salespeople are in a pharmaceutical company? What's their range? What's their quota? Stuff like that. Primary collection refers to talking to people, interviewing people. As a small CI company, I have people all the time say, well, I'll just Google it. I'll just get an answer there. Well, you might get something from profiles, but primary collection, actually talking to people, is invaluable because you're not going to find that in a database. You're not going to find that on a profile. You're not going to find that in an article. What you are going to find is former employees, customers, potential customers. They will have, it's a gold mine of information. So when you're starting a new business, right guys, go to those people who make a sign, or somebody's putting up a sign, go talk to the owner, find out, hey, what'd you like about this process? What'd you not like about the process? What is the competitor doing that, you know, is great, is not great, but we can capitalize on? Or if you're building a product, right? How long does it take from design to shelf? Could you beat it? How can you, you know, what worked, what didn't work? So those are the things that, as a CI professional, if anybody says, oh, it's just secondary, I just want secondary, they're missing a whole lot of information. So analysis, putting some shape to it. Some things might be nice to know. Some things might be invaluable, might be great. But the analysis part, because you're going to have so much information from the secondary and primary collection, the analysis really helps put some shape to all the noise that's out there. And then report and inform. It's great to have analysis, but if you're reporting to, say, a boss, a potential investor, a customer, you want to be able to present your information in a nice, sharp, concise manner. And then it starts again, planning and design. You go back. It's always a process of going from, okay, we solved this one problem, what's the next problem? I've had projects that are, the scope is 3 pages long. You're going to get lost in all that noise, right? So you want to keep things very concise, very sharp, and have like a beginning and an end point. You can't just have these long quests of information that just keep going and going and going. You want to make sure it's nice and tidy. It's the same thing with campaigns, right? There's an issue that people are running on. Donald Trump, immigration. He hit a nerve, right? He's doing some data collection, whether it's secondary and primary, electioneering, canvassing, just going out there, testing the idea, having focus groups. I don't think Donald Trump did any focus group because he's just shooting from the hip. And then there's analysis. Is it working? Is there traction? Getting out there, getting the vote out, getting people out there to campaign for you. And then it starts again. So you see this in a campaign, especially in the presidential campaign, when it's primary after primary after primary. They're doing this sort of one after the other, right? Iowa issues are totally different from New Hampshire issues, which are totally different from South Carolina issues. So they're doing this at a condensed cycle. Whereas you might have, in a business, you might have a year, 6 months. Here you might have a couple days, a couple weeks. So there are similarities. So here's one quiz. Can you read that back there? This is an issue that was going on in this campaign, a bitter, volatile campaign, accusations of inconsistencies, candidates to portray themselves as a conservative choice, Middle East in total disarray. Anyone want to guess? When this was?
2004.
Okay, here's... Anyone know who this is? Cicero, 64 BC. So this isn't a new phenomenon. This has been going on forever. So here we are, American campaign. This is a fictional thing, but I thought this was true.
John Adams is a blind, bald, crippled, toothless man who wants to start a war with France. While he's not busy importing mistresses from Europe, he's trying to marry one of his sons to a daughter of King George. Haven't we had enough monarchy in America?
I'm Thomas Jefferson, and I approve this message because John Adams is a hideous, hermaphroditical character with neither the force and firmness of a man nor the gentleness and sensibility of a woman.
If Thomas Jefferson wins, murder, robbery, rape, adultery, and incest will be openly taught and practiced. The air will be rent with the cries of the distressed. The soil will be soaked with blood and the nation black with crimes. Are you prepared to see your dwellings in flames, female chastity violated, children writhing on a pike?
I'm John Adams, and I approve this message. Because Jefferson is the son of a half-breed Indian squaw raised on hoe cakes, and Hamilton is a Creole bastard brat of a Scotch peddler.
The nastiest, most negative election
candidates have taken dirty to a whole new
It can seem like a return to civility is not possible.
So all those comments are from letters that they wrote. Actual quotes from letters they wrote to me. So this has been going on for a while. But the first, openly hostile campaign Which one was it? Anyone?
Yes. 1824, not 1828.
Is it 2020? Okay. So I thought it would be fun to put it together for Twitter, right? Hashtag killed somebody. He's a bigamist. He wasn't divorced. I thought it would be kind of fun. So, what's the process? So we start early years. When were they born? Where? Who are their parents? George Bush, right? That came out against them, right? Demographics. What race is he? What? Where is he from? Education. Where did he go to high school? College. Graduate school. Grades. Honors. There's fact and there's perception. George W. Bush had higher grades than Al Gore and John Kerry. People thought George Bush was an idiot. And everybody thought Al Gore was a brilliant person, but grades were good. Military. George Bush avoiding the draft. So companies, professional. Companies. What companies did he run? She run. Who are their clients? Hillary Clinton, you know, used to defend rapists. Is that going to come up? Probably. Deals. Whitewater. That's going to come up again next year. This year. Associations. Personal. Relationships. Marriages. Marriages. Donald Trump. Third time's the charm, I guess, right? But it's going to come up. His real estate dealings. What clubs did he belong to? Associations. Who are his business partners? Political. Marco Rubio hasn't been in the, he's been in the Senate, but he's not really there. What does his attendance record look like? That's going to come up. Where are they getting their money? Fundraising. So all of this information, right, is all put together, distilled, put together in a book. It's a very similar book to like what I wrote. That covers everything. Now it's probably a database of some sort. But the Ted Kennedy book I wrote was 500 pages long. It's a lot of dirt. So here's some current examples of what's going on now.
So the question is Ted Cruz, is he a natural-born citizen?
A Texas lawyer has filed a complaint questioning Republican presidential candidate Senator Ted Cruz's eligibility for the presidency. Trump gloated on Twitter about the announcement, "I told you so." Houston-based attorney Newton Schwartz filed a 28-page complaint Thursday asking the U.S. Supreme Court to decide if Cruz, who was born in Alberta, Canada, to an American mother and Cuban father, can legally become president.
But if he were lucky enough to win, and he's your candidate, he's going to be sued by the Democrats. They've already said they are going to be suing him.
The U.S. Constitution states that no person except a natural-born citizen or citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president.
You know, back in September, my friend Donald said that he had had his lawyers look at this from every which way, and there was no issue there. There was nothing to this birther issue.
In addition to eligibility questions, Cruz has faced scrutiny over a New York Times report that he had failed to disclose in Federal Ethics Commission filings almost $1 million in loans from Citibank and Goldman Sachs, where his wife works.
So that's one example, right? Not only do they hit where was he born, they're hitting him on the money.
Just one other thing, I got to get this off my chest. Donald Trump is a jerk.
Donald Trump facing new criticism for something he did on the campaign trail last night in South Carolina. He appeared to mock a reporter with a disability.
Okay, you got
to
see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. I don't remember.
I have a 12-year-old son who's handicapped. He has cerebral palsy, and that just made me so angry. And I told my wife I just couldn't let that stand. I had to do something to make sure Donald Trump wasn't the nominee for the Republican Party.
I believe life is precious. I think life is truly a gift from God, and we're all equal under God's watchful eye. That's what I believe. And when anybody anybody disparages people with disabilities, it sets me off. That's why I called him a jerk. What kind of person would you want to have in the presidency that does that? At what point do we say, enough of this? Let's start solving problems.
I'm Jeb Bush, and I approve this message.
It's just two examples, right? So, you know, we could sit, was this a good ad? I don't know. It went from 30% down to 3%, so maybe not. But, you know, they're getting Donald Trump every day talking about personal attributes or just attacking and attacking. So there are two strategies in a campaign. You can do death by 1,000 cuts, or what's called a silver bullet. 1,000 cuts is just methodical, every day, new issue, just boom, 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 right? If you're a business and you know you have your sales team out there, you might have a battle card, what's called a battle card, on, okay, you know, what are we selling? We're selling cleaning services or a product or whatever, and it's how do you compare against your competition? You might have it down to a script. And this politician that I'm gonna show you next is Australia. She is one example, and she's just on script, just boom, boom, boom.
The gloves are officially off in the race to be Queensland's premier, with incumbent Anna Bligh landing the first blow on LNP leader Lawrence Springborg. Ms. Bligh says she's not afraid of a contest and called on Mr. Springborg to show the state what he's made of.
Mr. Springborg has vacated the field, and I think it's time he got on the field and told us what he's on about.
Ms. Bligh says this will not be a dirty election, and she wouldn't be drawn when asked if she thought Mr. Springborg was lazy. But she questioned the opposition leader's parliamentary attendance, his policies, and even his personal energy levels.
Firstly, does he have the ideas, the policies, the programs, and we don't know because he won't tell us, and does he have the personal characteristics to lead Queensland at one of the most challenging times?
Before a packed Queensland Media Club luncheon, she even accused him of not working on weekends.
And I don't expect necessarily that he'll work every weekend, but I never see him. And I think it's a fair point. Where is he?
Recent polls have shown a drop in support for the Bligh government, with an election not due until 2009. Mr. Springborg was unavailable for interview, but his office issued a statement criticising the Premier's series of personal attacks on the opposition leader. Mr. Springborg says he's only had 2 days off in the past month. Natalie Perhonen, QUT News.
See, she says, this isn't going to be a dirty campaign, but this guy's lazy and stupid. Throughout the campaign, she went through and just repeated that on and on and on. When I was working campaigns, I would basically have the stump speech memorized by the end of the day because it was repetition, repetition, repetition. So think about when you're selling or counterselling, you want to have your sales pitch. Boom, 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 right? You hear about, you guys are starting a new business, elevator pitch. It's almost an extension of that, right? It's same story. We offer, you know, great service, good products, good customer service. You don't want to, may not want to compete, like, badmouth your competition, but at least you're saying, this is what's setting us apart. So it's sort of subtle. The other thing is a single topic, silver bullet. Here is a brutal, brutal ad.
If you have any question about what John Kerry's made of, just spend 3 minutes with the men who served with him 30 years.
I served with John Kerry. I served with John Kerry.
John Kerry has not been honest about what happened in Vietnam.
He is lying about his record.
I know John Kerry is lying about his first Purple Heart because I treated him for that injury.
John Kerry lied to get his Bronze Star. I know. I was there. I saw what happened.
His account of what happened and what actually happened are the difference between night and day.
John Kerry has not been honest.
And he lacks the capacity to lead.
When the chips were down, you could not count on John Kerry.
John Kerry is no war hero.
He betrayed all his shipmates. He lied before the Senate.
John Kerry betrayed the men and women he served with in Vietnam.
He dishonored his country. He most certainly did.
I served with John Kerry. John Kerry cannot be trusted.
Swift Boat Veterans for Truth is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
So now there's an actual term called the swift boating. It's just one shot, brutal, brutal shot, attack on the competition. You know, some people say it was not entirely accurate, but this definitely affected the election. So you need to be careful about silver bullets, because as I'll show you next, what if you miss?
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
A leader of the Godless Americans PAC recently held a secret fundraiser in Kay Hagan's honor.
There is no God to rely on. There was no Jesus.
Well, Hagan, under God, I the Pledge of Allegiance, you're down with that.
We're down with that.
In God we trust, you're going to whip that off the money?
Yeah, we would.
Godless Americans and Kay Hagan. She hid from cameras, took godless money. What did Hagan promise in return?
There is no God.
So this ran in North Carolina in the Bible Belt. Brutal, brutal ad, right? Elizabeth Dole running for re-election in the election in the Senate. And this is what happened.
I'm Kay Hagan, and Elizabeth Dole's attacks on my Christian faith are offensive. She even faked my voice in her TV ad to make you think I don't believe in God. Well, I believe in God. I taught Sunday school. My faith guides my life, and Senator Dole knows it. Sure, politics is a tough business, but I approve this message because my campaign is about creating jobs and fixing our economy, not bearing false witness against fellow Christians.
So remember in the slide, it says, if true, this is worth 5 or 6 days of campaigning? Well, they missed the point that she taught Sunday school. So her whole Dole campaign basically imploded after this counter ad. So, got to be very careful if you're going after a silver bullet, because you got to make sure your facts are straight, that you're hitting the right message, because you're going to get punched back. So, how do you get to this point? How do you find these little nuggets, right? So as we're, like I said, you're talking about framing, right? You're putting things into perspective. You might start to put together maybe table of contents. And look at these might be just simple. And when I was doing political ads, it was, okay, here's a sheet on abortion. Here's a sheet on debt. Here's a sheet on good government, zoning, wildlife. You know, you're covering everything that might be going on, right? You might come up, boil that down into some themes. Gender card, ethics, lying, pay to play. You know, these are some things that sort of bubble up, right? And you never know that seniors are going to come up in a campaign, but you've got it ready, right? We would have a debate, and we'd have this form filled out with all of these topics. And we'd sit there, and as the debate was happening, if a politician said something, we'd pull up the page about death penalty. We'd type in the person's response. We'd have all the votes ready to go. By the time the debate was over, we faxed out. This was back in the 90s, so we had fax machines back then. We would fax out the response saying, this candidate is lying, or this candidate said this, and he actually voted this way. So it was an immediate debate response. We would have... The really good campaigns would have these talking points at the ready whenever we were on the road. It was basically in a tear sheet book. You just rip it out of the book and hand it to a reporter, and there you go, you got your article. So it was really, really effective. Does anybody want to guess which politician, this is the actual opposition research book for a politician. Anybody want to guess who it is? Big hint right there. Sarah Palin. So, right? You had all these themes. They had like a 300-page book on Sarah Palin, right? They rolled these up. This is executive summary. She's too socially conservative. Her management style is the bully, the man of political loyalty. But what really hit was she's not ready for prime time. She had no clue how to run, Alaska. How many people were from Alaska? Population of Essex County, right? So you might have all, like we said with the table of contents, you might have all of these ideas that you can hit somebody on. And you might have all these themes that sort of bubble up from them, but there might be one or two strategies that work. So you just got to be prepared. It's kind of like cold calling, right? How many people call people just out of the blue? It's like you keep going. You get rejected. You move on to the next one. Or it's like when I was single, my dating, you just get rejected all and all, right? You move on to the next one. It's a numbers game. So effective campaigns, use this model. And it's similar to a model that companies would use. Define their core question. Why is a candidate running? Why are you developing a product? Why are you a cleaning service versus whatever science, right? Why are you going into business, right? That's a core question. It's a little bit, you need to understand, do a self-evaluation. Change drivers, right? We talked about four corners analysis. What's driving you? What are your assumptions in the market? What are your capabilities? What can you do? What's your current strategy? What do you want to do 5 years down the road? What's your strategy to get there? Build scenarios. These aren't outlandish scenarios like if the market goes to hell in a handbasket, but it's something reasonable, right? A merger of a cleaning company becomes instead of a mom and pop shop, it's a bunch of companies now. Now you're competing against them. How do you do that? Right? A new phone comes on and you're looking to do some packaging or some kind of product associated, or a pet supply, right? What's going on there? What's going on in the market? What are the implications of those scenarios? I had a client that was in consumer goods, maybe a food product. And we did this analysis of this company. We had it all mapped out, like all these scenarios, what was likely, what was not likely. So when one of those scenarios came true, we were prepared. We had this executive come running and his hair's on fire. What are we gonna do? Hey, we're good. We already planned this out. We already worked this out through a scenario. We're prepared. We're gonna do X, Y, and Z. We're gonna reevaluate, and then we're gonna go maybe do A, B, C then, right? So you might have your scenarios, and then you start to adjust your campaign. What's working, what's not working? And then you wanna monitor, right? What's going on with the market? Okay, you talk to some potential customers. Go back and talk to them 6 months later. Did the sign hold up?
Yeah, could you give an example of like the two or three types of scenarios that you would use that would come up in a business situation?
Okay. BPA in cans, right? It's a liner within a tin can, okay. Right? They thought it was just a blip on the radar. Oh, BPA, it's nothing. Then all of a sudden, it gets more and more press. Well, my client prepared to say, we can come out with a liner of a can that's not BPA, right? It's a little bit more per can, but at least we're prepared. They didn't want to do it until they had to, right? Keurig, who has it? Anybody know the Keurig, the coffee machine? They came out with their 2.0. Did they think about the implications or the ramifications of launching a 2.0 can brewing machine? No, it was a big flop, right? So that's another example of they assumed that their market was a certain way and it was totally different. So their scenarios were off. Their implications were off. So they had to go back and they monitored. They saw that it wasn't working, so they went back. Now they're making some changes to that.
But that's an example of failure,
right.
not of actually having thought through what the likely scenarios are.
An
example of where someone proactively actually did that process that you're recommending.
Yeah. So for example, let me think of some other ones. The manufacturer of machines. Right, pharmaceutical machines. They're looking at the market. Their scenarios are, okay, this drug's coming off market. We need to be prepared because our customers are going to launch generic drugs of Humira. They looked at all those generic drug manufacturers and said, okay, our current market share of those clients or wallet share within those clients is pretty small. But we know we are going to be prepared to go to them a year out and say, this drug's coming off patent. We are going to help you develop these new machines. So then they were able to go and get the framework ready. So when the drug came off, they were like, 3 months, new drug, we're on the market. So it may not just be looking at the market, it might be looking at your customer base. You may want to look and say, hey, I've got 3%, 5% wallet share of this customer, but I know this is happening with my customer. How great would it be if you show up to a client of yours and say, hey, your signs are falling apart. What are you guys thinking about? Can we go back, can we help you sort of develop a new sign, right? Or a commercial real estate company saying, you just bought this property, let me get in there and help you clean it out. Being proactive, understanding where, some of the scenarios, and maybe taking it another step so that you're monitoring, you're learning, you're always going back, tracking changes in the market. So this is a common sort from Dem Gilad, who's, I call him the Grand Poobah of competitive intelligence. He talks about knowing the environment, right? Understanding where your brand is. Societal, political, and environmental, technological, economic. Those are some global scenarios, right? What's going on in the economy, what's going on in the country, what's going on regionally. Those are some things you need to understand. Right. Identify the risks. Also, identify some of the opportunities. Analyze what's going on in that market. So you're not just putting blinders on your company. You also want to sort of see where you sit, and then drill down. You'll see these. Put together some monitoring. What's going on? Find some signals that are going on in your industry or your market or your customers. Right. We're starting to hear lots of news in the business world about earnings and things like that. What does that mean? Is the market slowing down? Are there layoffs? Right. So then this might help you develop a strategy or an action plan. So, but then it gets back to the go back to the beginning. Always going back to the beginning. So when I was working in campaigns, we always wanted to ask those questions up front. Why are you running? What do you plan on doing? How are you going to go out there and talk to people? So if you're launching a business, why are you starting this business? If you're approaching them, making a sales call, why are you approaching them to do your service, to offer your service? So here are three examples of candidates.
When I think about why I'm doing this, I think about my mother, Dorothy. She was abandoned by her parents at the age of 8. Sent from Chicago to LA to live with grandparents who didn't want her. But people showed her kindness, gave her a chance. Like the teacher who saw my mother had no money for food and started bringing her extra from home, whispering, Dorothy, I just brought too much food today. She went to work in somebody else's home at age 14, and it opened her eyes. For the first time, she saw parents who loved and cared for their children. And that's the kind of loving family she provided for us. When she needed a champion, someone was there. I think about all the Dorothys all over America who fight for their families, who never give up. That's why I'm doing this. That's why I've always done this, for all the Dorothys. I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
Okay, so it's a good ad. It's out there. It tells exactly why she's doing it, right? So here's another example. It's a playoff of that first one.
I'm getting ready to do something too. I'm running for president.
Our founders never intended us to have a professional political class. They believed that citizens and leaders needed to step forward. We know the only way to reimagine our government is to reimagine who is leading it. I'm Carly Fiorina, and I'm running for president. If you're tired of the sound bites, the vitriol, the pettiness, the egos, the corruption, if you believe that it's time to declare the end of identity politics, If you believe that it's time to declare the end of lowered expectations, if you believe that it's time for citizens to stand up to the political class and say, enough, then join us. It's time for us to empower our citizens, to give them a voice in our government, to come together to fix what has been broken about our politics and our government for too long. Because we can do this together.
Not bad, but it's using sort of the environment, right? Everybody knew Hillary was running. She's taking that to the next step, right? So, and then this is a great example. I think it's quite funny.
I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. So when I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork.
Joni Ernst, mother, soldier, conservative.
My parents taught us to live within our means. It's time to force Washington to do the same. To cut wasteful spending, repeal Obamacare, and balance the budget. I'm Joni Ernst, and I approve this message because Washington's full of big spenders. Let's make them squeal.
Pigs disapprove everywhere.
All right. So they all do the same thing. They all make an introduction. They all sort of say, this is why we're running, right? They set the stage because rule number one in politics is define yourself. Don't let the competition define you. So this was always a touchy conversation when I was in politics. We would do this on our own candidates, and we'd pull out all the weaknesses. And we'd say, you took this trip with this assistant who's not your wife. Tell us about it. Or you were sued about this land deal. Tell us about it. So we would know their weaknesses. And to see them squirm in their seats, it's a very uncomfortable conversation. So sometimes you have that very uncomfortable conversation. I've had those with clients and say, listen, you know, you're up running above, going up an uphill battle. Maybe it's time to reassess your strategy. Right? So you want to do a little bit of introspection. So here's an example of understanding the weakness in the market, facing it head on, and putting it to bed.
You already are the oldest president in history. Some of your staff say you were tired after your most recent encounter with Mr. Mondale. I recall yet that President Kennedy had to go for days on end with very little sleep during the Cuba Missile Crisis. Is there any doubt in your mind that you would be able to function in such circumstances?
Not at all, Mr. Truitt, and I want you to know that also I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience. I still have time, I might add, Mr. Truitt, I might add that it was Seneca or
anyway,
Cicero, I don't know which, that said, if it was not for the elders correcting the mistakes of the young, there would be no state.
So, he knew it was coming, right? All of his aides said, they're going to hit you on the age issue. Be prepared. They came up with this thing. Or Bob Livingston. Didn't even get in the race for the House because he knew this was coming, and this was such a damning report. They actually had pictures of him with this lovely lady that he just said, forget it, I'm done, right? So he didn't want to go through that mess. So there are two examples here, right? You either face it, go after it, position yourself like how to win that uncomfortable situation, or you just get out of the game, right? Maybe you don't launch a product. Maybe you don't launch a service. Say, it's not worth it. It's up here, right? It's better to reassess your strategy than waste a lot of time and money against an opportunity where you just can't win. So, an example of that, define the core, right? Take it a little bit further. So, failed campaigns, you know, they understand the market in which they're they're competing, sometimes that market changes significantly, and you may not know that it's changing underneath your feet. For example, I have a friend who sells real estate. Selling real estate in a bad market, it's just very difficult, right? So, or launching a new product within bad economic times, or launching CES is a consumer electronics show. Launching a product right after the electronics show may not be the best time to do it. So here's some examples of the ground shifting underneath the candidate's feet, not being able to address them.
February 16th, 2003, Fort Hood, Texas. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West had just received deployment orders and prepares his men to go to war. That night, South Beach, Miami, Patrick Murphy is thrown out of a club for fighting, covered in alcohol and unable to stand. Murphy then confronts and verbally assaults a police officer. Patrick Murphy was arrested and taken to jail. Two men, a country in crisis. You decide.
I'm Alan West, and I approve this message.
So what happened in this election was the congressional district shifted. He went from a +4 Republican district to a -3 Republican district. So he was facing an uphill battle. He just couldn't get over that hump, and he lost by 3 points. So, and then here's most recently from December.
He's a former Marine officer, highly decorated in Vietnam. He worked for Ronald Reagan. He's for a tougher border control. He opposes the deal with Iran. So the question is, why is candidate Jim Webb a Democrat? We had a long conversation with him yesterday and asked that very question. Take a look. So just to recap, you said the border needs to be enforced. You're suspicious of the Iran deal. You worked for Ronald Reagan. You won the Navy Cross as a Marine officer in Vietnam and the Silver Star. Why are you in the Democratic Party? That sounds like the resume of a conservative Republican.
Well, again, I'm not suspicious of the Iran deal. I'm worried about the clear implications of that deal. But I ran as a Democrat. I believe that the Democratic Party is the party that has taken care of working people for many generations. And I think the Democratic Party needs to get back to its basic message. And it has to understand, the leadership inside the Democratic Party need to understand that if you look at the election cycles of 10 and 14, they need to reach out and include white working people in a way that they have in the past.
Using the phrase white working people almost disqualifies you, though, from the Democratic Party now, doesn't it?
Well, I think we're going to reach a period fairly soon in this country where the racial and ethnic labels themselves are going to not have the same meaning, and they shouldn't have the same meaning in governmental programs. We need to take care of people. You mentioned the Appalachian Mountains. Clay County, Kentucky is the poorest county in America, and it's 94% white. And they vote Republican because they do not believe that the Democratic Party has a place for them. And the Republicans consciously take care of their issues in terms of honor, cultural traditions.
So you are a veteran. You're, I think it's fair to say, a war hero. A book was written in part on what you did in Vietnam.
So we'll move on. So you saw that, right? The ground totally shifted underneath his feet. It happens every once in a while. But you sort of think, yeah, I got elected to the Senate as a Democrat. This looks great. You know, I can just become a totally different set of circumstances. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of how my opposition research for a business competitor, right? We talked about looking at the early years and the education, right? So what that might be? History of the company. Who are they? Where do they come from, right? What's their culture? You see a lot of consumer goods with Hispanic labeling now. A lot of companies like Unilever have Spanish labeling on some of their products. Current strategy. Where are they focused? What are they doing? How are they going to market? How do they create value to the customer? Here's some examples. What's their current products? What's the pricing? Where are they focused? Right? Future strategy. This gets into some of the four corners analysis that I talked about earlier. Is, are they buying somebody? If they bought this other company, what does that mean for me? What does that mean for my customers? What does that mean for the market in general? Where are they likely to invest? I've pulled lots of property records. For example, in Texas, HEB, it's a retailer, it's a supermarket. It's like a competitor of Walmart. Basically a food store, but they have everything there. I had a client said, hey, let's look at this company, let's find out what's going on, where are they expanding? So we pulled all of the real estate records, we checked all the real estate records around Dallas, Waco, and some of the other counties. We just pulled the records, we found some property that they owned. They weren't doing anything with it, but they owned it. So we mapped out exactly, okay, these are the certain areas where they could possibly build a new store. So the client was like, okay, great, we'll put a store here, we'll put a store there. So they're able to proactively go after their competitor before the competitor even made a move. What are some future products? Look at patents, right? Patents for product development. Where companies, you know, have they invested in a patent? Have they invested in hiring strategies? Who are they hiring? What jobs are they posted on LinkedIn or Monster? Are they hiring user experience technicians? Are they hiring PhDs in a certain pharmaceutical area? Are they hiring salespeople in a region? What does that mean? Are they weak in a certain region and all of a sudden they posted a bunch of job openings for salespeople in a certain region? Those are indications that, hey, they might be making a move. I had one client, they had a job fair. And I think they did the job fair because it was the end of the school year. I found out that they weren't actually hiring anybody, they just had a job fair. So this client comes screaming, job fair, they're gonna hire all these people. Well, no, their talent acquisition person told me that they're just doing it because they have a partnership with the high school, with the college. So you have these indications, but again, you wanna find primary information, people you're talking to, that can inform the secondary information that you're finding. Any questions on this? I know I'm going to sort of go on through some things. So, I'm going to show you some other ads of companies launching new campaigns.
Diets are evil.
No fad diets.
I'm not falling for the quick fix diet.
This time, it's different.
I am going to take it off and keep it off.
And Curves Honey Crunch Cereal helps.
5 grams of fiber?
That's a lot of fiber.
I mean, how do they fit all that fiber in there?
It curbs my hunger.
It's like fiber and delicious.
Yummy.
I stick with it because I like it.
Last time I got in these jeans, it was 2 kids ago. These are my skinny pants and I'm in them.
Thank you.
Curves Cereal. Losing weight tastes great.
Okay. I know we're mostly guys here, but Curves. You all know what Curves is? Gym for women, right? I'm going to launch a cereal? What? It was a huge disaster. But the manufacturer assumed that we've got this great brand. It's going to be awesome. I'm going to launch this product. Complete failure. And then earlier last month, this company launched something, and I want to see what you all think about it. Sweaty guy going in the tub of Coca-Cola bottles. They were selling, they understood their brand, right? They understood who they are. They're not selling Coke. They are, but they're selling an experience. They're selling like the lifestyle. All of that stuff that was there, that's what they were selling. They understood who they are. They understood the environment. They understood sort of, you know, how they could connect with their customers. So totally different example. One complete failure. Coca-Cola is now relaunching themselves because they saw that overall soft drink sales are down. They need to re-up their efforts to connect. Right? So here are some other ads that try to redefine who they are. Right? So, and then show a couple good examples and then one really bad one.
One of our nation's largest private companies is proudly built on American values and skill. Coke Industries started in the heartland and has expanded to nearly every state. Today, that means more than 60,000 American jobs. We're still branching out into new fields, but our vision has stayed the same, to provide innovations that help people improve their lives. You may not always see our name on the products you use, but we're working every day to help make better food, clothing, shelter, transportation, hygiene supplies, technologies, and other necessities. Here, we build on each other's ideas to create more opportunities for people everywhere. Together, we are Coke. Find out more at CokeCareers.com.
Okay, so this ad ran 2 years too late, because 2 years previously,
the Koch brothers are spending upwards of $3 million on political television advertising supporting Dr. Monica Webby.
Well, they're coal and oil billionaires.
And they want a senator that will look out for them, and that's Monica Webby.
She wants more tax breaks for corporations that ship jobs overseas.
And big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires.
The Koch brothers would get hundreds of millions under her plan.
And she'd pay for their tax breaks by enacting a Tea Party budget
that the Koch brothers supported.
They would make massive cuts, up to 25%, to everything in the federal budget.
Cuts to education.
And cuts to Social Security and Medicare.
Cuts to our Medicare.
I guess that's why they're dumping millions into Oregon.
Because Monica Webby wants whatever they want.
She'll help people like the Koch brothers and not people like me.
Not me.
Not me.
Not me.
So during the election cycle, the Koch brothers were everywhere, right? The boogeyman. So they felt the need to go out and put together some kind of ad to reintroduce themselves. But it's 2 years too late. And granted, they're still several billion dollar company. So the point is, you got to get ahead of these things. You got to be proactive. And they were not. So here's some other examples.
Proud of you, son. GE, manufacturer.
Well, that's why I dug this out for you.
It's your grandpappy's hammer, and he would have wanted you to have it.
Meant a lot to him.
Yes, GE makes powerful machines, but I'll be writing the code that will allow those machines to share information with each other. I'll be changing the way the world...
You can't pick it up, can you? Go ahead. He can't lift the hammer.
It's okay, though. You're going to change the world.
GE's doing a good job, right? They're getting proactive. They're moving to Boston. Okay, now it's done. They're trying to get ahead.
Pick it up.
To say, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. You don't like it?
It's a negative ad. It's portraying the
old man.
Yeah, I mean, you're not ennobling your employee.
They're trying to say that we're a software company.
Yeah, that's not what they're saying. Exactly.
So, anyway. Is another one.
Domino's oven-baked sandwiches beat the taste of Subway's 2-1. Then Subway's lawyer sent us this letter demanding we pull our commercials off the air. I was going to burn the letter, but everything's better when it's oven-baked. Let's roll the commercial.
Domino's oven-baked sandwiches beat the taste of Subway's 2-1. How much is 2-1?
This jump represents the number of people who prefer Subway. Now Domino's. That's 2-1.
Domino's oven-baked sandwiches beat Subway's in a national taste test 2-1. Yep, Domino's.
So remember the silver bullet, right? They thought they had this silver bullet. We'll send a letter. Well, it backfired. Now Domino's is doing, well, they changed their name now just to Domino's, but they're doing a really good job. So, some key lessons going forward, right? So we talked about know your own strengths and weaknesses. Do some self-assessment. That also includes a vulnerability study. You know, small businesses, funding is huge, right? Cash flow is huge. Are you able to weather some storms, right? Look far beyond the immediate threat. Look at yourself, say, okay, yes, the market is this, but we don't plan on being in business just for 6 months. We want to be in business years, okay, several years down the road, right? Stay on message and be proactive. Not just be content to look at the current state, but say, okay, if things change, or, you know, let's go do this sales call. We're going to stay on message. We're going to be, we're going to go and talk to people. They may not have a need. They may not have a need for a sign this year. They may not have a need for a new cleaning service this year. Just constantly going out there, right? Be aware of minor ripples. This is, we talked a little bit about, blips that might be out there, right? You may not think it's a big, big thing, but if you sort of monitor it and you have a good, you know, ability to adapt, or your scenarios are such that you understand that if this happens, you'll be ready when, if you need to be. Know that the environment will not last, you know, in addition to look far beyond the immediate threat. Business is always changing. Campaigns are always changing. Campaigns, they're on a different message every day. You know, businesses, you're on a different sales call every day. You're always trying to be there and be prepared. Understand the messages and have them permeate the campaign. Campaign could be a marketing campaign, could be a campaign for an office. And then harness technology to monitor campaigns. You know, set up for a business, set up an RSS feed. Have a Google alert. Just be prepared. Have some means of going out and using technology to your advantage. Because when I started in campaigns, it was going to the university like this and getting microfilm and going through microfiche. You guys don't know what that is. It's the olden days, the archives, right? Everything was taken, a picture of it, right? You had to go through the films. It was a nightmare, but that's what we did. Nowadays, everything's on the web. It's great. So use technology to your advantage. It makes life so much easier. The idea about dissemination of information, make it easy to consume. I've been in presentations where an executive would come in, they've got 5 minutes. I've shown them one slide. It's all the time they had for. Be prepared for that one slide, right? To say, this is who we are, this is our message, this is why, this is the value we bring. So, with that, questions, comments? Did we learn something today? So, for the next week, you're going to hear campaign ad after campaign ad after campaign ad. Just think back, how did that start, right? Are they reacting to something? Are they building on something? They probably had to build up some kind of scenario, work through the talking points. They had to develop the message. So think about that when you're developing your own campaign, marketing campaign, sales campaign. Develop some kind of scenario. So when you're in a difficult sales situation, you know, about price, or about, I don't know, value or some other aspect. You're ready for that discussion so that you can be on message, proactive, nip any kind of fear, uncertainty, or doubt away from your customer. Yeah?
I know you can hire data miners.
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like in terms of the amount of time that you need to be doing it? Like, if you were to do it on your own, obviously you'd be doing it forever, or get lost in, you know, all kinds of different directions. But
right.
If you have miners specifically looking at your industry and what's going on, is that like something you should do like 1 hour a day, or like spends?
Well, it depends, I mean, really, it all depends on what you're shooting for, right? I mean, I've got some clients where we're looking at pet foods, for example. What's going on in the pet food industry, right? You might tweak it to, you know, the point about using technology. You might be able to set up an RSS feed or a Google alert so that it's all just dumped into one file and it takes, you know, maybe half an hour to go through some of this stuff. So you can, it really depends on what you're looking to do, right? I mean, I have other people that I know in this business that they work with, you know, all this consumer data that comes in, and they're monitoring sales of per units and revenue by companies, and et cetera, et cetera, and they spend all day on it. So it really depends on what you're trying to do with the data. So it just sort of fine-tune what you're looking to do.
It kind of depends on what you were talking about earlier. When you were kind of saying, it kind of depends what you're looking at and what happens, like, at the beginning and the end. So you
right.
kind of want to put it into a little bold. Like, I might be looking into what's my customer acquisition cost.
Right.
That might be one thing. Like, you might just, a beginning and end to it. Like, what exactly am I trying to figure out? And when is it enough is kind of what you're asking, right?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it's always evolved.
It's like an ongoing thing.
Yeah, you prioritize your scope, right? Say, okay, I know for the short term, I need to know.
Why don't we ask him what he's doing? What are you trying to do?
Yeah.
Well, so for example, I'm a dog walker, and so I'm trying to get like behavior and, you know, articles that enforce positive things so that people can be educated and adopt services. But you know, if you're spending all your time doing that instead of meeting people or, you know, judging what the prices are of every other competitor, then, like, you know, that's something that I think you have to do a little bit every day. But
that goes into self-assessment though too,
yeah.
Like where you're at in your company, like what stage you're in, things like that. I know for myself that I not only own a company and run a company, but I'm also an employee of my company. So how much time do I spend on a job site physically working? How much time do I spend, you know, running the books? How much time do I spend on advertising, marketing, you know, and the beer, bookkeeping, things like that? Like, it's a constant cycle. How much time do I spend on searching my competitors out? What they're doing, how much are they charging, what's the new product out there, why do they have more work than I do? So it's a balance, but you have to find that, you know, there are ways to find it, and that's part of, like, coming here is to find out, well, how much time, but every job is different, you know, so what you do is going to be different than what I do, or what they're going to be doing at times. It's all, you know, it's relative to your very small scope, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can go on Craigslist, do a search, and just that could be 20 minutes, and you're sort of good snapshot. And then just remind yourself, go back next quarter, look at it, see where they are, have things changed, you know, things like that. But again, it's, you know, for your particular business, going to Unleashed, going to this, you know, this pet store, talking to the owners. You know, the hardest thing about collection and competitive intelligence is the approach, right? I talked about it. It's sort of like dating, right? It's just a numbers game. It's how do you get that person talking to you, right? And there are all kinds of courses about engagement, of a, you know, having a conversation, getting it started. But really, it's, you know, finding that hook. And you've got the hook at a pet store. Be like, well, they obviously own a pet, or they think they have a pet, right? If they're in the cat section, you may not want to be in the cat section because who walks a cat, right? You know, sort of, you know, look at the dog section and just sort of, you know, lurk around, find some people, and start to talk to them. Be like, hey, do you have a dog walking? Have you thought about it? Just get some customer testimonials. And that might be the most effective use of your time. Rather than going out and saying, well, okay, I'll spend all this time gathering all this secondary data But in the end of the day, at the end of the day, does it help you? It may not. I'm a big believer in engagement with the actual customer.
Yeah.
And doing some customer interaction.
But like what you're, I think presentation was about is knowing the things that kind of make you better than the competition.
Yep.
So saying like that's a lot of stuff to know before I even talk to someone.
Right.
As well.
Yeah, it gets to the self-assessment, right? You don't want to be. I have a friend who's launching a product, and actually, Abby, she's entering in the business plan competition. And she's launching a date in a box, right? It's stuff that cause engagement with people, right? When they're going out on a date. And, her biggest thing is if she knows her audience, professional, busy, sort of middle-aged folks. She knows exactly who they are. And she's done all kinds of research. At the end of the day, the most fulfilling thing for her was going and talking to customers, getting a sense of, would you buy this? How much would you pay for it? That was really, she had all this data, but she went through a focus group, and it was, the data didn't come in the question. It was just sort of, would you buy it? Yeah, great. Anything else? Corey has been in competitive intelligence as well for a long time. So she did I miss anything? There is. I mean, we could spend all of those models, four corners, SWOT analysis, pest analysis. You could spend a whole day on each of those. But really, I thought because we're in a political season, it's always fun to. Use some examples that are sort of hitting us in the face every day. So. Yeah.
Would it be possible to get the slide with the quote from the, you said it was, I think, 64 BC?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was funny. If you mind if I take a photo of it?
I don't know.
Where is it?
The only thing.
What was it waiting for?
It was Cicero. It was like.
From Wall Street Journal, March 2012. My high school Latin teacher, I sent him an email. He was so excited that I was using this. So, anyway, thank you all for coming. It's 10 o'clock. I think we did okay. Okay.